Ramsey, but we really appreciate you taking out the time. I want to again tell people that you are an internationally syndicated columnist, a media consultant, author, founder, editor of the Palestine Chronicle, and the managing editor of the London-based Middle East Eye. You are the author of Searching Jenin, the Second Palestinian Intifada, and My Father Was a Freedom Fighter, Gaza's Untold Story, and you've written the extraordinary work with Alon Pape, Our Vision for Liberation, Engaged Palestinian Leaders, and Intellectual Speak Out. Listen, we really do appreciate the time, and we are sorry that this situation is perpetrated year after year, and Blinken is there again. Blinken is a good name because he knows when to do the blinken and when to do the looking. But we thank you for taking the time out, sir.
Thank you very much, Dennis, and it's always great to talk to you, and keep up the good work.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 10:59 a.m. Next up is The Bike Show. And welcome to the KBOO Bike Show, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon on 90.7 FM and streaming on https://kbo.fm. All our shows are also available on www.bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. I hope this winter day finds you well and healthy. Thank you for being with us today. In the first half of the show, our guest will be Dr. Olha Martinyuk, who is from the Ukraine, a historian of nationalism and civil society, as well as urban environmental studies, public history, and bicycle history in her land. In the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with two bicycle activists from Arkansas. Bea Apple, who's co-founder of Bike POC, an organization that, in its own words, is fostering, quote, a community for women, trans and non-binary Black Indigenous people of color who ride bikes, and Lauren Hildreth, manager of community programs for Trailblazers, an organization that advocates for regional recreation and transportation where trails, cycling, and active transportation infrastructure become a reality. My name is Alon Rab, and I would like to thank our engineer Ty Walker, and also Chris Smith and Josh Hetrick. And I am joined today by co-host Nedra Deadweiler. Good morning, Nedra. How are you doing today?
Hey there, Alon. I'm doing great. It is good to be here, and I'm happy to be on, to be back on live.
Me too.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's good to be live. And how are things? You are in Atlanta, and how are things in Atlanta lately?
Oh, you know, it's unfortunate. The Cop City was approved. They just received their permit, which is going to be a 95-acre training center for police and fire that's in really the last forested area of Atlanta,
right,
over 300 acres. So pretty sad.
I wish the news was better, but this show, especially the second half, will be about Arkansas and people working to increase cycling and environmental awareness. And our first guest will also be giving us, I hope, some hopeful replies and information. So let me, we're having a little bit problems reaching our guest. So I'll just have the station engineer play some messages for a minute while I try another way to connect with our first guest, the Ukrainian historian. So Ty, if you could play a few station messages. And Nedra, I'll be talking to you later. At the
Okay. Okay.
Takes two wheels and no gasoline to keep yourself healthy and to keep the air clean. You can ride in the sunshine, you can ride in the rain. It takes two pedals, two wheels and a chain. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. You can take a ride up in Forest Park. You can ride with the light if you ride in the dark. You can ride from the mountain down to the beach. You can ride on a trail. You can ride in the street. You can ride through a puddle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. It doesn't matter if you're big or small. You can take a ride to work. You can ride to the mall. Just keep the sky up above and the ground underneath. Get some wind in your hair and some bugs in your teeth. Everybody, ride your bicycle. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam. Let's get together and leave our cars home. Everybody, get on your bicycle. Let's get together to pedal and roam.
Have some faith in me, 'cause we really do know better. and we do belong together. Have some faith in me. If the world would leave us to it, we might very well get through it.
It's raining cats and dogs and creatures. There's more to do than you can feature. Get control of your life some way. You got to give the car away. He needs the wheels and he's stuck on a skateboard. Go max out your credit card. Get out of town, it ain't that hard.
Have some faith in me, cause we really do know better, and we do belong together. All you really need is a ticket for a plane ride. Follow me to paradise. And you're always in a hurry. Got to be someplace that you never want to be when you arrive. And there's always a new worry that will not go away, and it constantly affects your state of mind.
Such a waste of time. Your best friend, who do you talk to, who really listens, who can you completely trust, who loves you babe, who loves you this much.
Have some faith in me, cause we really do know better, and we do belong together. All you really need is a ticket for a plane ride. Follow me to paradise. Just keeps getting better, and it's going to last forever. All I want to be is your best friend and your lover. We were made for each other.
Looking forward, all that I can see There's good things happening to you and to me. I'm not waiting for times to change.
In Baltimore County, and although I my base is in Kyiv, Ukraine, I'm now living in Switzerland, in the University of and I'm working in the University of Basel.
And were you always a cyclist? Did you ride bicycles growing up?
Of course not. I would never start this book, I guess. I learned cycling when I was 26 years old. I mean, I learned urban cycling. This happened in Vienna. And it took a while before I learned the basic skills of urban cycling, and I'm still not really all that skillful. There's many things that I can't do, and I'm afraid to do. So when I tried cycling, I liked it a lot as an urban transportation. I started thinking, why is it such a popular means of transport in Vienna, but not in my home city of Lviv and not in my home country? I started digging that question, and very soon I got to realize that the Ukrainian cities are historically not very friendly to cycling, but Ukrainian countryside nevertheless relies on that means of transportation. And well, I'm still looking for a good explanation of this phenomenon.
And you are currently working on a book, Bicycle Mobility in Ukraine, 1890 to 1990. Who were some of the first cyclists in the Ukraine?
It was very similar story as in the U.S. and Western Europe. When we talk about 1890s, we use the term the bicycle boom, the time when the bicycles were really kind of very top notch innovation, and there were many questions related to what can a bicycle do? What can a human being do with the bicycle? Ukraine did not produce bicycles in 1890s, but it was part of the global world, and it imported bicycles, also some from the US, the Columbia bicycles produced in Hartford, Connecticut. They were imported sold in Kyiv, and everyone could cycle so long that they could afford it. And of course, not so that many people could afford a bicycle, an imported from the US or Western Europe bicycle. So these were mostly wealthy people, well-off people, and often people who wanted to show to demonstrate some prestige and access to innovation.
And what is the history of women cyclists in the Ukraine? And were you able to find some information about early women cyclists? And were they, as in other lands, also involved with the struggle for women's equality?
Yes, women cycled from the very first days, and already in 1890s, we know of some female cyclists. Of course, they were not as many as male cyclists, and of course, they had to deal with for them, cycling was not that easy in terms of social of their social behavior, and cycling alone was not really encouraged. Women's pants were considered ugly, and women were kind of disencouraged to repair their bicycles. And of course, all bicycles need repairs even nowadays. So there were many barriers, but some women successfully dealt with these barriers, and some women kind of had courage to be in a conflict, in certain conflict with the society, step by step, the women could legitimize cycling in the society, and I think that it happened only in 1920s on the full scale, but nevertheless already in 1890s there were cycling women.
You are listening to the KBO Bike Show, and we're happy and honored to speak with bicycle historian and historian of social history, Dr. Olga Martyniuk, who is speaking about cycling history in her land, the Ukraine. You wrote, you did some research about cycling in World War II. I believe it's called Desirable and Dangerous, Cycling in World War II from a Ukrainian Perspective. What was cycling like in the war, and who were the cyclists? Were they used by armies, by the partisans?
Yes, it is a complex question, and I as a historian of cycling, I am constantly thinking about some specifics of this region as compared to other regions in the world. And when we look at World War II, we can see this specific quite clearly. While in the US, bicycle was kind of a sign of patriotism during World War II, and while using a bicycle was kind of an act of helping the nation to deal with a shortage of fuel and industrial resources, it was a very different story in Ukraine, and of course, a different story in, you know, Netherlands or France, which were also under German occupation, but they did not suffer as much as Ukraine did. We should understand that on the Eastern Front, the battles were much heavier, much longer, and the occupation was much more violent. And within the course of the war, almost all owners of bicycles, like the bicycles changed the hands. And basically, both totalitarian regimes, the Nazi totalitarian regime and the Soviet totalitarian regime, kind of denied the right of private ownership for the bicycle, and both tried to deploy bicycles to their needs. So the Nazi administration expropriated bicycles and other property. Of course, we understand that millions of Jews who were murdered rights to cycle only when they were officially employed under the Nazi administration, and that again, like even using a bicycle was a kind of sign of collaboration with an enemy, no matter who looked at this situation, Soviet or Nazi administration. And of course, both armies used these bicycles. They did not make official photographs that much of their soldiers on the bicycles. Both armies tried to present themselves as kind of modern, technologically advanced armies, and the German troops, when we think about the typical images, we would think of panzers and the aircraft, but in the reality, the German army was not as technologically as advanced as it presented itself, and we should understand that thousands and hundreds of thousands of soldiers marched on horses, on foot, and on bicycles to the Eastern Front and back. And similarly, the Soviet Union, the Soviet Army took bicycles as trophies and used it more and more and more. And when the Soviet Army reached Berlin, the soldiers used the trophy bicycles as kind of toys and transport. So bicycle was there even if we do not think about it. Mm. Bicycle can be also used as a... Mm.
What a fascinating history. Our time is almost up. It's hard to believe we have about 5 more minutes. So I'd like your research, the book project is covers the years 1890-1990. What was the situation after the collapse of the Soviet Union? Did independence increase bicycle infrastructure, popularity?
Yes and no. So before the Soviet Union collapsed, the Soviet Union collapsed for different reasons, of course, but one of the reasons was the kind of deficit of user of goods on the market that one could purchase, and these were all sorts of goods, and the and one of the very much desired thing that the Soviet citizens wanted were cars, and cars were never promised to the Soviet population, and cars were very rare, although urban populations enjoyed quite a good system of public transportation. So after the Soviet Union collapsed, the Ukraine and other post-Soviet countries lived through a period of massive automobilization. I don't know if that word exists, but so there's a lot more cars on the streets, and that of course boosted the economies. But at the same time, the public transport is not developing as fast as it did during the late Soviet period. The bicycles are still there when we are speaking of rural Ukraine. They're still part of an economy, and they're still important to many people in their daily commute. What we see is that urban, we kind of see a renaissance of cycling in urban areas, just like elsewhere in Western Europe and in the US. This renaissance is not as well pronounced as we would like it to be, but nevertheless, the first steps were taken, and the first, and probably if it was not for the war in Ukraine, we would probably see a better bicycle infrastructure within the coming years. And we still hope for that of course. The more and more urban populations choose bicycles for the benefits that it gives. And when we are thinking of crisis like the COVID pandemic lockdown or the current war, we see many instances where bicycle turns to be a quite a practical means of transport. So what the future is, we do not know. What we see today is that Private transportation is very handy when the public transportation fails. Of course, it's not a good sign when the public transportation fails, but we can also note that different means of individual transport are there on place and are being used. And probably there will be more room for cycling in the coming years.
We have been speaking with Ukrainian historian Dr. Olha Martinyuk, who shared her research and knowledge about cycling in her homeland and much more. In one word or two, what's next for you personally? Where do you see yourself in the future? Or?
Well, I like my field, history of science and technology, and I like to research small technologies. So I'm of course working hard to finish this book. And it's not that easy. Kind of bicycle is a banal thing, but when you start researching when you start researching mobility, you know, it gets very complex. So I think that number one goal is to finish the book, and number two, move on with other inspiring projects that bring you to the radio.
Amen. So, appreciate you being on the show, and thank you for your great patience with the technical difficulties we happened at the beginning of the show. My apologies. So thank you, and all the best with your all the best with your work in life. And of course, I'm sending wishes also for peace and justice for the people of the Ukraine. So
thank you. We all appreciate your support, and we're all working hard to build a better world. So stay with us.
Thank you so much. We have been speaking with Ukrainian historian and bicycle activist Dr. Olha Martinyuk, who shared her research and knowledge. In the second half of the show, co-host Nedra Deadweiler will speak with Bea Apple and Lorraine Hildreth, two bicycle activists from Arkansas, who are working to make cycling in their state more popular and safe, and increase ridership among groups that have been historically marginalized and discriminated, including in the world of cycling. So, Nedra, are you on the line with your guests?
Yes, we're all here. B and Lauren?
Hi.
We're here.
Okay, great. Super excited to have our guests with us today. B is co-founder of Bike TOC in Northwest Arkansas, and Lauren Hildreth, Senior Manager of Community Programs for Trailblazers. Both of them work on the Critical Mass Summit, among other things. So delighted to have you both here to talk about your community, biking, building community, and your activism, and sort of the vision and plans that you have for 2023. But before we get into all of that juicy stuff, want to just really focus on who you are as a human in the world. So what is something about your essence, like who you are as a person, that you would like to share? What is uniquely you that you bring to bicycling? Because both of you are unique individuals. And what is a personal, a memorable, transformative bike experience that you've had? I know it's a lot, but...
Do you want to start?
Yeah, I can go first. So the essence, one of the aspects of me is that I'm always trying to get back to a space where my inner child can thrive. I'm trying to just get back to a place where the me that exists before the world comes in and tells you all the things you're not supposed to be. I want to get back to that spirit. Something super unique about me, I am quite a good yo-yoer. it's a hidden talent. And then a transformative bike experience for me happened in the summer of 2021 when I met up with a bunch of fellow BIPOC cyclists from all over the country to race the Steamboat Gravel Race. I went out there and got to meet in person a lot of folks that I had met in 2020, and we all just knew each other off the internet. And that being in community with all of these different cyclists from all over, and kind of having this common bond of loving the outdoors and loving bikes was transformative.
That's all great. Lauren?
Let's see. I think the essence of, I guess, what I seek in life and even through work is that connection and community and curiosity. I think those are kind of the core values in my life and how I approach my relationships, my work, and how I try to interact with people and the world around me. And maintaining that at the core helps me to refocus and kind of keep as centered as you possibly can during all of the chaos of the world and everything going on. But when I remember to kind of turn to who's in my community and who I share space with, and remember to be curious about, you know, each person's experience and what we're all bringing into this life, that's really what kind of makes, for me, life worth living, and it makes it all tick. A formative bike experience, I would say kind of two, and both of them have been group riding experiences. I did my first like group ride. I'm pretty new to biking as a real thing. Like, this bike culture and cycling world was something I didn't know anything about until I started with Trailblazers, which was then Bike NWA in 2020 here in Northwest Arkansas. And I've always been a person on a bike, just riding around. I've used it for transportation through most of my adult years, didn't have a car for years, and just used a bike. And then living and working here in this space, I didn't realize there was this whole culture around it. So my first group ride experience was actually when Rahsaan Bahati and Elliot Jackson were in town in May of 2021, I think, and and Kim and some others, Candace Kozark, had helped bring them here and do some work in the area. And we went on this group gravel ride, and it was the first time I'd ever been on a bike with more than maybe five other people. And I was so excited and overwhelmed, like bombing down these gravel hills with all of these people. It was just so much fun. And then the other was I had the privilege to go to Oakland, California in April of last year and do one of the East Bay bike parties. And if you don't know what that is, it is pure magic. I didn't know that bike community could look like that. And now that I've seen it, I want that all the time. It's like, this is the epitome of what bike culture could be. And it was every kind of bike, every age, every person, every ethnicity, every like style of riding all mixed in one. Less music and a whole lot of dancing, and it was awesome. I don't know if I have a hidden talent. I feel like I'll just leave that.
Well, I mean, that East Bay bike party sounds like a lot of fun. I wrote that down on my list. So just, you are listening to KBOO Bike Radio out of Portland, Oregon. Today, we're with Bea Apple of Bike POC and Lauren Hildreth of Trailblazers out of Northwest Arkansas. So, as a co-founder of Bike POC with Kim, can you tell everyone what Bike POC is about and how it got started?
So Bike POC is just a mashup of the words bike and BIPOC, and really the name kind of just got attached to the work that we just were doing organically. Kim and I, we kind of exist in the Northwest Arkansas community and firmly believe in the power of representation. And especially in the world of mountain biking in Northwest Arkansas, we were two
of very few women and two of the only women of color who were mountain biking in Bentonville. And this was before, like, we had the trail scene that we had at the time. And we also are, like, community leaders, and I have owned multiple businesses, and Kim has sat on multiple boards, and we're just have raised family here, so we have deep roots in this community. And, you know, we've spent a lot of our time just kind of organically representing and being in the community and, you know, like, nurturing our own children through the bike process and getting them, and then in that process, like, coaching, and then also, like, hosting small group rides, teaching kids, doing NICA, all of these other things that help contribute to a larger bike culture. And then what happened in 2020, you know, with George Floyd's murder and the social upheaval that, you know, happened worldwide, we really came to the understanding that, you know, so much of what we love about biking is the freedom aspect and, you know, taking up space and being in community. And, you know, something as traumatic as George Floyd and everything that has happened and is happening kind of really speaks to that fundamental issue of, like, the ability to be out there and take up space and exist as your authentic self. And you know, we found that our ecosystem in Northwest Arkansas wasn't prepared to have those conversations. You know, and if you look at the history of Arkansas, and, you know, we're still waging battles around the ability to even tell our stories, you know, at a school level, much less at a cultural level. Kim and I looked at each other. We were like, I guess we're the ones. So we kind of moved from being behind the scenes, kind of trying to help nurture, you know, diversity and a culture of inclusion from behind to out front, and saying, look, these are the issues that are facing, you know, marginalized folks on bikes. Bikes, turns out, are not the great equalizer, because not everybody's perceived the same way, and not everybody has the access to bikes the same way. And, you know, where we were starting in the community was from scratch in a lot of ways, is, like, you know, trying to educate our community about how we got the infrastructure that we got and the ties to systemic racism and the culture. I mean, if you look at the history of Arkansas, it's littered, it's all over the place. You can see how bad infrastructure coupled with racist housing and highway policy has contributed to what we have right now. And, you know, we've worked really hard to get our bike ecosystem, number one, present the data to them, but then also help to connect the dots in the hopes that with more awareness we can move towards better legislation. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, and you've accomplished a lot of work. We'll get more into some of the practices and community building work and what's happening in Arkansas real soon. Before we get to that, Lauren, both of you have talked about representation and community and really being present. So as a founder of Beers and Queers, and also being in the Northwest and the organization that does the bike planning and gets the largest organization, can you speak to what representation means for you and your community?
So at least from a queer community standpoint, and recognizing that I am a white cis woman existing as a gay woman in Northwest Arkansas, but how I show up first by, you know, first glance in this area, just recognizing where my perspective comes from, and then especially do not speak on behalf of the trans community in the state and in this region. But with Beers and Queers, so just starting with that, is I moved here in 2016, and I'd come out a year before. I was 26 years old, and I'm like, where are the queer folks at? Like, I know I'm not alone. I mean, I literally used five or six other people, but we don't have this common thread to connect with each other. There aren't gay bars. There's no strong, visible, gay, queer culture that's just on the surface, ready to be seen and jumped into, and wanting to just hang out with people and meet others and know that we aren't alone. I think that's probably one of the biggest things, at least for me, from representation, is just knowing you're not alone in your experience. We all come with our own individual backgrounds and all of those threads that make up the story of who we are. But when you get to show up with people and be that full self and know that there's that, just kind of that baseline of acceptance and understanding without always having to explain who you are, where you're from, or what the day-to-day might feel like, or, man, coming out every other day, or coming out at work, and just being able to show up somewhere and be like, hey, what's up? We all know we're queer. Let's just hang out. Let's make friends and go from there. Yeah.
Well said. So this is a question for both of you, and because you are involved in your town, and you can talk more about Northwest Arkansas, some of the political issues, some of the social issues. How are you building community in your work, like in your practices? Because it's not just say, hey, everybody, come out, get on a bike. Some people are afraid to be on a bike because they have immigration stuff, or because they're Black and they're like, I'm not getting on a bike, you know, car, or, you know, whatever it is, or I don't have the right kind of bike. What have been some of the techniques that y'all have utilized and ways of being to get to build that community that has grown around you?
I think this is a really good, and Lauren, we can tag team this, because this is a really great illustration of how a larger, more established advocacy organization can help nurture like this culture through initiatives. Is you know, when Bike POC came on board as an official initiative of Trailblazers, we knew that we had more space to actually talk about these issues around systemic racism and all this kind of stuff with a much more clear and like distinct voice, because that was our mission statement, was specifically to talk about those issues. And so that, coupled with ongoing training that was happening inside of Trailblazers, and that like that myself and Kim were doing around unpacking, you know, how white supremacy shows up in the nonprofit ecosystem and how it shows up on teams and just in interpersonal relationships, we were kind of, and then just even studying from, like, you know, like, and, you know, Destiny Thomas, and learning from the work that she does, and like focus, like learning from other movement organizers and people who have worked in these kind of adjacent organizing activist spaces to understand, you know, what are the methods for building a grassroots movement from the ground up. And so much of it is just really centered for us on community and building that community first, and building the relationships on a one-on-one basis first, and like building the programs through the ongoing relationship and understanding what the needs are. Because so much of like how, you know, nonprofits usually tend to surface in communities, and, you know, we can look at the data around all of this when you look at the board structure and who they're funded by and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. They tend to reproduce systems of white supremacy simply because they are more invested in doing things to the community and coming up with solutions that are not developed by the community, you know? Mm-hmm. So what we tried to do was dismantle that from the very beginning by developing relationships, mining our own personal experiences for, you know, the infrastructure that we experienced as children and as adults and as teenagers, and connecting that to historical situations of, you know, gentrification and development. And since we're working in the active transportation space, really working intentionally to build relationships with other organizations and people that are doing work directly in the community. And we've had nothing pertaining to actual being on bikes.
Yeah.
But really, again, just about building the community. And
I think the other thing that we also knew going into it, just because we had taken the time to kind of study as a team and personally what the issues were, is we knew going into it that so many of the issues that, you know, marginalized folks are facing on the ground are as a result of and could be solved by better transportation access. You know, poverty, education, access to food, so much of that can be, so much of those problems can be answered by better infrastructure. And so what we were trying to do is A, develop relationships with organizations, help educate and our community on how transportation solutions can, you know, be a, like a real solution to the problems that you're facing, but then also help people feel more empowered to make those decisions in their community, because so many times people in communities are disempowered from making those decisions for themselves. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to say, hey, everybody has a place to be saying, hey, I want this in my community, I don't want this in my community. And then I think, you know, Lauren, you can talk a little bit about kind of at a higher level what we're working to kind of manage up.
Yeah.
And develop programs that give us air cover.
Right. I think kind of going back to the beginning of what you were saying is, you know, with building those relationships, one of the things I think I can say that I've learned a lot and I feel like the organization is learning a lot is we first have to start with being honest about what the problem is, giving language and visibility to what we're talking about and why it matters. I mean, how often I know y'all have been having this conversation in the region for so many years, and finally hearing about people say how important it is to have the language to discuss the issue. That came up with Critical Mass Summit this last year in 2022, that a couple participants were saying, I just didn't know how to explain this. And now I have the language for how to explain what I'm seeing and what the problems are and what I've been experiencing. And now it allows me to advocate for it differently by being able to talk about it and also not being afraid to call it what it is. Like if we're talking about a racist system, if we're talking about white supremacy and how these structures have been built, whether that's a, you know, a physical structure or more of that, you know, intangible organizational or community political structures, being able to actually talk about it. And, you know, Bea and I, and the Trailblazers with Bike POC have been hosting these other conversations through the Pass the Mic series. And that's a huge piece of it is shedding light on just having the honest conversation with the people that are a part of the community that are being impacted the most and giving a platform to people who usually haven't been allowed to speak and share their experience and share their story. That there also helps build that trust in the community is by saying, you know what, me, Lauren, I'm not going to be the person on the stage unless it's directly tying to my experience. I need to step aside and have this other person come in that is the expert in their experience and their lived history to talk about what it's been like and what a different person who's using public transportation every day should be at the table about decisions on how it's being built. Someone who's using a bike to commute to work should be a part of the conversations about how infrastructure is being designed and how it's serving the masses better. Not everybody who's just sitting behind a desk and gets to drive a car into work every day and doesn't ever have to think about what it would be like without the vehicle.
Mm-hmm. I think the other aspect that's really cool that Trailblazers brings is that, you know, they've funded through their DEI initiatives, they've funded, you know, bringing in detailed, us doing detailed surveys in like all the different ethnic groups that are situated in Northwest Arkansas. We're also developing like a massive bank of data that is like about folks' perceptions around cycling, you know, what are the barriers, and also maps that show where the population centers are versus where infrastructure is. And we're just at a very unique tipping point in Northwest Arkansas where there's so mm-hmm. much opportunity to like build this next generation of infrastructure in the same
place that we were in the 1960s and 70s with this like whole like urban renewal. And you know, we're just in such an awkward moment where we could tip the direction in a way that actually serves the needs of the community versus repeating the mistakes of the past where we bulldoze, you know, marginalized poor communities for infrastructure and then, you know, repeat the same mistakes of the past and therefore suffer the same cultural, you know, ills that we're kind of seeing today. So,
and that's just the opportunity again of the region because mm-hmm. it's so new. That's why having these conversations here and now is so important, mm-hmm. is we have the opportunity to not have to go and be retroactive in 20 years because we could do it right the first time. You know, as we're thinking about rebuilding and reconstructing all these roads because they were built 50 years ago before the population of what is Northwest Arkansas now existed, both from a demographic standpoint and also just sheer numbers standpoint, is we can influence the planning now. And there are great people in the region that, you know, work within the cities that are working at other private for-profit organizations, a number of other nonprofit groups that are trying to help influence this along the way and are really providing great data. You know, how often, you know, we need to have data to support it for a lot of reasons. And that's also hard, is how to collect it. And Trailblazers is trying to help support the communities, the city leaders, to making decisions by being able to say, hey, here's the data, here's the numbers, here's the spreadsheets, here's the counts, whatever it is that you need, let us help you so that you can advocate for the best practices.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate you sharing that because a lot of ways that some bike advocacy work is like the bike advocacy has an agenda and it's usually get more infrastructure, but it's not necessarily tied to having a full idea of what every person who will experience that infrastructure, what it wants. It's usually after the fact. So uh-huh. if someone is not white, middle-class commuter, you know, like wearing certain labels, they may not be a part of this decision-making. So in really taking the time to invest in community first, I mean, it almost is like a novel idea, right? It's in time for it to be the way that leads decision making, and by showing people that you value them and their experiences, then it, you know, you get like that right kind of data that is needed. Mm-hmm. Biking has been called a rolling signifier. I know it's been said many different ways. There seems to be a lot of impact that your work has made. Can you talk about some of the impact of even the perception of bicycling for some people? Because it could mean like, oh, that person is poor because they're on a bike, or it could mean like, this is how I find my way to liberation. I am getting healthier. This is how I find my people. What have been some of those changes around biking for your community?
I would say one of the immediate changes, or not immediate, but one of the most like apparent changes that have really given me a lot of hope is the amount of community we've been able to build among all of these like differing like cycling kind of like cultures. So there's all these different groups. There's All Bikes Welcome with Rachel Older, and there's Arkansas Latinas in DC, and there's All Bikes Welcome. Like there's this like, and to me that's showing that there's signs of like a healthy ecosystem, is like when you have these different groups starting to pop up. I think that's been one of the signs, is just the community we've been able to build.
That, and I think, you know, coming from very much outside the bike culture and bike community and being kind of thrown into it, is, you know, we all seen them, those both sides of that line of those in and those out. And so kind of to your point, is someone on a bike, depending on your own experience, you look at that and say, well, you know, is it because they're doing it for recreation? Is it because they're using a bike because they don't have an alternative? But working in this community to help bring more people into that cycling bubble is a huge part of Trailblazers' work and our community programming. And I'll mention even just real quick is yesterday during this programming meeting that we had, I laughed with our managing director afterwards and said, hey, pretty cool. There wasn't a cis white man in that meeting. It was, we were talking about ability. We have different abilities in that meeting, different races, different languages, different ages, and how important that is when we're thinking about who is in bike culture. That needs to start being reflected from a management level, from a programming level, from a director level. And Trailblazers is working on that, and it's pretty cool to see and be a part of.
We're trying to break some more just glass ceiling.
Yep.
All of them coming up. Yep. last question, what are you looking forward in 2023? We're I guess February 1, Thursday of Black History Month. What are you looking forward to?
We're running out of time.
Year?
I'm just going to say healing in community is what I'm looking forward to.
And if I may jump in here, this is Alone Robb, the co-host. Unfortunately, our time is up, but I would like to thank our guests today. We've had inspiring guests, and Dr. Olha Martyniuk of the Ukraine, Bea Apple and Lauren Hildreth of Arkansas. Thank you so much for your good work, your knowledge, and sharing your lives and experiences with our listeners. All the best to you. And thank you also to Nedra Deadweiler, my co-host, our engineer Ty Walker, and also Chris Smith and Josh Hedrick for making all shows available at bikeshow.portlandtransport.com. I hope that the coming month is a much lighter, easier, and peaceful month than recent months. I hope that the days ahead will see more actions towards making our home, the Earth, more bike-friendly, environmentally conscious, and centered on human and planetary needs, and not on greed and hate. Thank you for joining us today. May all your rides be safe, enlightening, and joyful.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 12 o'clock noon. Next up is Jazz Lives.